You're listening to Am I the Boatcast, the only podcast about Magic the Gathering you are listening to right now. It's me. It's your boy, Mike Carrozza. Howdy doody. It's your boy. Howdy doody. Jesus fucking Christ. Sorry, Ken. Anyway, it's me. You might know me for the column over on EDH Rec, Am I the Bolus? You might know me for my stand-up comedy, but right now you know me as the guy talking to you, and thank you so much for being here. I am thrilled with this episode. Just got done recording with our guest today, Cass Hines, a.k.a. Strixhaven Dropout. Excellent writer for EDH Rec. Such a great voice to have in the mix. Really thrilled to have her on, and we had a great chat. So I can't wait for you to get to that. But before we do, I have to tell you about our sponsors, Cardsphere.com. You got to get your cards here, buddy. Cardsphere.com. We got more sets coming all the time. You're going to want singles. Where better to get your singles than a place that will let you trade cards for cards, cards for money, cards for everything. Look, Cardsphere.com. I'm pumped as hell to get my hands on a couple cards from Avatar, The Last Airbender already. I know I wasn't so hyped on it, but some of these designs are pretty sick. The Cabbage Merchant alone looks very stupid, and I kind of like it. And is it going to be my first mono green commander? No, I don't think I have that in me, but he's a really cool card and belongs in at least one or two of my decks. And frankly, oh God, the Lord Ozai and that saga that turns into the firebending. Oh God, there's so many cool cards. I'm thrilled with the way this set is turning out, and I appreciate all the love that seems to go into it. I'm really very much looking forward to Lorwyn Eclipse, and I'll tell you what, you can get cards for that when they come out on Cardsphere.com. Use the referral link in the description of the episode, and make sure to sign up for your account and get trading today. Cardsphere, get your cards here. Don't forget, you can also use promo code BOLCAST on BoneBoxGames.com so that you can get yourself a freaking sick deck box, a playmat, anything you need from BoneBox Games. Those guys are sweetie pies. They design premium deck boxes for your decks, and I'm thrilled with what I have. I'm still rejiggering some decks. A lot of decks getting cut now. A lot of decks are coming apart. It feels weird. It feels nuts, but it does mean that the few decks I have left are really going to earn their keep in their bone box deck boxes. So shout out to Evan and Jesse. Love you guys. You're the best. And make sure you go give them a follow online and keep an eye on when they announce new products. I don't know if there's something coming soon, but it does feel like almost time for something to be announced. Who knows? Don't know. What am I saying? I have no idea. Promo code BOLCAST. Get into it. Anyway, you can find me at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza, Linktree/Mike Carrozza, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, all that good stuff. Find my comedy album, Cherubic. You get my comedy dates online, and I am going to Japan soon. So at some point we'll be taking a bit of a break, a brief hiatus, while I'm away. And, unless Morgan and Michael want to do stuff on their own, in which case we'll just make it the Morgan and Michael files. Solani is gamesfreaksa.info, where you can find all your Games Freak SA needs, go check out Michael's stuff. Solani's got a lot of really cool videos now, and they're really fun. He's gotten really good at that, and he's perfect for it, frankly, and I'm really proud of him. Morgan edits edhrec.com and is just a super genius, and I love her a bit, so make sure to follow her on Blue Sky at Indigo Gentleman. And shout out to Ken, our sweet, sweet boy, editing the Bolcast from f***ing Day Dot. Sorry, Ken. Big fan of that sweetie pie. The part of the DNA of the show, I'll tell you what. And I'm thrilled. First of all, I want to say thank you to everybody that's writing in. Thank you to everybody that listens. I cannot thank you enough for what you do. I appreciate everything you add to my life. And please, if you need to tell me anything, amithebolus@gmail.com. Am I the Bolcast on Blue Sky? Just get in touch, say hey, or if you have any feedback, any questions, you want to submit a story, get it to me in my inbox. I'd be stoked to have it. We are going to be doing more mailbags, especially if we're trying to bank them for my time in Japan. That's where I'm going. And so heads up, we might do a lot of mailbags. Get your stories in. So yeah, I think that's a good place to leave it. Now it's time for the interview with our guest today, Cass Hines. You're listening to Am I the Bullcast, the only podcast about Magic the Gathering that you're listening to right now. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza, and we've got another guest on the show today. She's a writer for EDH Rec. You might know her as Cass Hines, but also AKA the Strixhaven Dropout. Welcome, Cass. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. I'm a fan of talking about this sort of stuff.
I am so stoked you said yes to doing the show. You've been quickly becoming like one of my favorite writers on EDH Rec. I think it's so much fun to have someone else in the mix talking about like the social elements of the game and, you know, kind of asking bigger questions and, you know, discussing the game surrounding the game or, you know, the all of that. And more, I really am thrilled that you have been writing for EDH Rec. You've been such a fun addition to the team, and I'm so stoked that you're on today. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I love that there is this conversation about the social aspects, because I think so much of Magic that we're trying to solve with brackets is basically a social issue, right? It's not it's not what cards you're really playing. It's whether or not someone wants to be a bad person or a bad actor, or whether or not people are sharing how they feel about something honestly, or whether or not they're bottling it up. A lot of that stuff comes down to like social interaction.
Thank you. I completely agree. The bracket thing will never be perfect, but the idea being, let's get a conversation started, completely on board with that. What I don't like is that, you know, you'll still have people who turn it into a spreadsheet and go, but it's a bracket two deck. How? What do you mean it's like a four? You know?
And what we should do in those situations is socially pressure those people to be honest. And I think that the bracket system, at least with the most recent update, I've been like talking
huge
about brackets.
All,
yeah, I love a lot of what they're doing. Some of the things I'm questioning, but I want to see in practice before I judge too quickly. But sure. One of the things is that at the very top, it says this is a rule zero conversation lead. It is not a way to explain how strong a deck is and correctly balance things, because you can't quantify 30,000 cards over the course of 30 years into a deck that balances with two different commanders, right? It's so random. So I really appreciate that we're having those kind of conversations, that people are socially discussing what they're playing.
Completely agree. I think that, like, obviously the bracket system, people are going to take it to mean this is the official thing because it comes from Wizards. But if you're not looking at it as a conversation starter, you're already doing it wrong. And that's a lot of, I mean, my inbox for the column is filled with people saying he said it was a bracket two and then it was blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, I guess like maybe we have to determine what that means. And then sometimes it just means that a bracket two deck did play and it got the nut draw right off the rip. Or, you know, like he played a Sol Ring turn two and I go, there's your problem. Maybe just, you know, be conscious of like sometimes variance, etc.
What I like to tell people is that you can't know what your deck is going to be with one instance of gameplay or even two or three. What you have to do is constantly assess your deck. And I think rule zero conversations should happen pre and post game to be like, this is how I experienced your deck. This is what it's done. If you find that you've built a deck and you're constantly arguing with people about the bracket, you're probably wrong about it. You're probably wrong if everyone is telling you it doesn't fall into that category.
Hell yeah. Yes. You came in hot and strong right away. That's awesome.
I will talk about brackets all day long.
I do think like before we get into like a pet peeve or like your a magic story where you might be the bolus or something, I do think that we're already in not necessarily hot take territory, but we're definitely chatting about exactly what this podcast wants to get into.
Yeah.
And I do think it would be good for me to ask you a little bit more about yourself. For my listeners, for myself, this is the first time we're speaking. I know you through your articles, but I don't know you very well. So I'd like to know, like, when did you start playing Magic? What's your relationship to Magic? And how would you describe yourself as a Magic player now? Like, commander-wise, limited, what's your go-to?
I started playing Magic because I wanted a job at an LGS. I really just needed a job, and the LGS is what called me back. I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh! When I was a kid, very, very competitively without being competitive. I would argue with my brother at our kitchen table a lot about Yu-Gi-Oh! I never played at tournaments or anything like that. So, but I was familiar with card games. I started playing Magic, and I tried to play Standard, but it was too expensive. And a lot of people at the LGS were playing Commander. So then I started playing Commander. My first ever set that I pre-released was Kaladesh. And it was such a spicy set too, right?
Yeah.
And I played that. I had a lot of fun. I became sort of obsessed. The best way to describe me as a Magic player is that I'm a turbo grinder. I love playing as much Magic as I physically can. I will play something like 10 hours of Magic if I can. If a friend says, hey, we're going to play at the LGS, I was like, we're going until it closes, until they kick us out.
Hell, see, that's what I'm talking about. That's the fun. That makes me, when it comes to Magic cons or like, you know, Command Fests or anything, that's where I'm at. That's what I want to be doing the entire time.
Yeah.
100%.
I find that more and more with more as a creator, I find there's less time for me to play Magic because there's just so much to do. There's like actual like events that you have to go to and manage. And I was like tabling for some groups and stuff like that. But sure. I always have to make time. If I don't get to play a single game a day, I'm devastated. I need to play at least a game a day. Like right now, last week, I only played one day of Magic, which was like about four games. And I felt like I was dying. I was like,
no way.
I need to. It's like I'm so obsessed.
No way. First of all, hell yeah. But also, holy shit. Sorry, Ken. I wish I could play weekly. Even once a week would do me a lot of good. My next game is happening on Tuesday. I have to wait an entire week because I got shows and I got to do the podcast instead of actually playing Magic. Like, it's just such a bummer that the job part of Magic is also getting in the way of actual playing Magic.
Yeah,
but
it does
at
that.
The same time, it makes me really appreciate the days that I've carved out with friends who are like, yes, we want to sit down for an entire day. Yes, we're ready to be loud and stupid at your place.
Yeah.
Yes, we're playing every deck we own. That's what's up.
Yeah.
So it's clear you're a Commander player. Are you somebody who dabbles in other formats at all?
So I think what makes the most sense when it comes to formats are the ones that I've actually played. I have been interested in other formats, but haven't necessarily played. I've always wanted to play like Legacy because it seems really interesting. I've played a lot of like Sealed. So like, they
pre-release
do like
events and stuff,
like pre-release events. I do every pre-release and I've done some drafting. I don't like to draft. People who draft are smarter than me and I hate feeling stupid.
Okay.
I literally watch a person literally do mental math when they play draft and being like, oh, I didn't see this color in this pack. And that's a common. So that means that a person two seats away from me is building this. So I need to reverse build that. And I'm like, I just want the rare out of the pack.
I want to see if I can make something silly happen with this thing. I've never seen it in play. And then if you go to 17 lands, you're like, this thing wins less than most commons. You're like, yep,
yeah,
that sounds right for me. Don't care.
Yeah, when I play pre-releases, I usually do well. Even if my pulls are bad, I've played Magic long enough to know what's going to do well at a pre-release.
But
draft, I only recently started drafting this past year, and I'm trying to do it more. And now with the pick two draft, I feel like it's more likely to get people to fire drafts. So that might mean that I'll play a little bit more draft, but still I'm a little salty whenever people outplay me in draft.
Okay. So you're competitive. You are in to win.
So a little bit yes, a little bit no. I like to say that I'm a person who likes to win, but not at any cost. I'm a Johnny, Jenny, I'm a Melvin. I like interesting things. I like clever things. I don't want to win just playing like Thassa's Oracle. I don't want to just win that way. I want to do something clever, right? That's what holds me back as being a truly competitive player.
I'll say when I found out about the Thoracle combo, you know, for a second, you're like, that's clever. Well done finding out that one. But it's also two cards and I'm bored. You know what I mean? It's
you're just constantly looking for that thing. I think the creativity, at least in CDH that I've seen, is how you maneuver other people trying to deny you that. that's where the creativity comes in. You have to be careful about mana open, the cards you've seen. It's kind of like weirdly like a blackjack, or like you kind of have to read what you've seen before to make a good assumption about what you can do in that moment. And I think that that's really cool, which is why I watch a lot of CEDH. I think it's really cool, even though I personally think that decks that are creative are more fun to play. CEDH as a format is really fun to play because of how interactive each turn becomes, because you're going to like turn six at the max, maybe seven. But most of the time people are winning and doing stuff so early on that you have to be really creative.
Right. And I mean, my favorite thing is what in terms of CEDH is finding out the off meta card in a deck that somebody's testing and saying, I think this has a shot, and then finding out it did work. You know, I remember years ago I was with Kevin, just Kev's Will at Commander Sealed, and he showed me his I want to say it was Blue Farm, but I could just be wrong about it. He showed me his deck and I kept pulling cards. I was like, this is in the meta? He was like, nah, I'm testing that one. And it's people are confused.
Well, that's what's so crazy about off meta cards in CEDH is that people don't know how to handle them. They see them and they're like, what is this? What's the line? What's the maneuver? How many turns do I have? It becomes like a lot of time off meta stuff do better than like standard meta because people don't know how to handle them. That only works for so long, and then people learn it, and then they're like, okay, here's your win.
That's what I've been appreciating from Hungry on Planes videos. If you don't know Hungry on Plane, I think he's an Aussie dude.
I've seen a couple.
Hell yeah. He's just like an unbelievable, like he puts together these like historical perspectives of old formats and one player who is doing the thing and maybe like taking the win, or somebody who submitted like somebody was like a block constructed deck took down a standard PTQ or something. You know what I mean?
I think I saw the video. I actually referenced it in one of my articles. I think this is the one about the person who played an off meta deck and is a pro tour champion, but nobody knows about him. I don't know if you've heard about it. It had to do with like epic spells or something. The epic like lock, where I think it ended up being like a stifle. I've seen this video.
There's so many videos of off meta people showing up and taking over, and to the point where you said it's the epic one. I'm thinking about the one that was brought in as like the affinity foil, like for, because everybody was all in on affinity and said like they couldn't possibly beat it. Or I mean, he also is a big fan of like control players, so like it's very fun to see someone who loves a control player discuss a master of control like Guillaume Wafotapa, who you know, who's quite a figure on this channel. But I think that's we're touching on the same thing, which is we admire the creativity that Magic can inspire and bring out of people. And I think that's where we align. Like, I'm very much, I would describe myself as a Melvin, as a guy who likes engines. I like to build a big thing that does a lot of stuff and have to make sure I can't miss these triggers. I have to be on top of it. And I got to make sure that all these little things are happening. That's my favorite thing about the game. And sure, it can lead to some longer turns, but I'm finally doing something. I didn't do something for like five turns. You know what I mean? I've banked that equity. You know what I mean?
You guys are taking smaller turns often. I'm taking one big turn once.
Yeah. And hopefully you die when that happens.
That's how I feel about my Zimon and my Prosper deck. They're both like slowly build up value and then have a really explosive turn. Prosper wins a little bit more than my Zimon deck.
Ooh, Prosper. So Prosper is one of my mainstays, and one that I don't get to take out too often because it's a little sweatier than other decks. But
it is pretty sweaty, yeah.
I love Prosper. I remember when Prosper came out, I played on a stream, and I had Uba Mask in the deck, and a creator in the pod I was with posted about it and being like, this card's not okay. But then also was like, he played it in Prosper and you know, it sorry Ken in that deck big time. and then the next like week Uba Mask shot up like a ton, and it was like one of those things where I'm like, I don't know. I know it's obvious, but I want to take credit for that. I'll take credit for that big time. I also was, I mean, any excuse to play like a quote unquote unusable Kamigawa card to and make that sing in a deck, I'll take it. I want that.
Wasn't that also what happened with, what is it, Shuko with Nadu?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's another Kamigawa card.
Yeah, crazy, right? Kamigawa, people loved it for a reason. It had to be underpowered because of the Saga block, but like, what are you going to do? Was that right after Saga? I don't remember exactly, but it was one of the underpowered blocks. Like, Masks was underpowered because of Saga, but then Kamigawa was not well received. Either way, really fun block. Honestly, I sometimes love going on Scryfall and picking a set I haven't really looked at in a long time and just driving. You know what I mean? I've been drawn to older sets lately again, just to like, especially with like a podcast like the Resleevables. I love to watch those to see what they had to say about cards at the time, and then also the insights of like what they were trying to do with this card and how you can see the inspiration. And also, I think it's fun to compare that to now, where Universes Beyond is so prevalent. But it also means that we're getting a lot more top-down designs, because Universes Beyond is dictating where the cards are going to go, right?
Yeah.
So I find it fascinating. Designing Magic, playing Magic, it is just such a fun hobby. And anybody who is resistant to playing, or you know, has anybody in their life that they're trying to get in on it, I think, buddy, try a little harder. Get them to try it.
It's the sort of hobby that I have explained to people on a lot of different situations, that it's the kind of game where you get creativity, you get thoughtfulness, you get community, you get all the things that you want in a third space, and you get to do that, and you get to be creative, you get to play with your friends, you have to be thoughtful, you get smarter. The game is so complex that you're learning so much as you play. Like, I love playing. Like, I was a teacher for 8 years, and I was playing with some people at my LGS, like, I want to say 4 days ago. I just sat down with some randos, and two of them had just started playing like since April. And I was like going through how combat works to give them opportunities to do something cool on their turn. Cool. And I was just like, this game is so complex and so fun that every time I see a person who's just started, they get so excited. They're like, yes. Oh, my commander is doing this thing, or I get to do this. And it's like, when they ask the question, does this work? Can I do this and this? Yeah. It works. You can do it. I love it.
It's such a good feeling. It's so good. I really, really love the amount of discovery there is in this game. And I think that that's something that we can all relate to. I think it's, I started playing Magic when I was like 9, or, you know, and I think what also helped was like, I was just so curious about the game that it made me look up what words meant. It made me understand things a lot better. It gave me this sense of like, it's not going to spoon feed things to me. I kind of have to work for it, but I really want this.
Yeah.
And I think that we're still getting that in the game too. And I think that's great.
I love it. I think it's an incredible game. If you're not playing Magic, you should be playing Magic, no matter who you are, no matter where you live, no matter what your hobbies are. If you think that you can't play Magic because you play basketball, I guarantee you go online. There are basketball players playing Magic.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Wasn't there like a super famous soccer player who like was just playing Magic with his fiance or something?
Yes.
Recently?
There was like a guy, I don't remember, I think he's an NFL guy, who went to MagicCon Vegas and was like getting stopped or whatever, recorded himself while he was there, and he went and did like a video where he was like, here are all the cards that I bought and how much it costs. And I was like, what?
Was that amazing? Cassius Marsh is also an example of that.
I'm not a football person, so I don't know. It might have been. I just know that it was a football. It was like a football person who was going around showing how much he spent at MagicCon Vegas, and I was like impressed, because I was like, oh, this is like normalizing it, because a lot of people think it's a little bit nerdy to play this game, to sit down, play with cards. But I'm like, it's so fulfilling. You got to try it.
It really is. It really, really is. And I'll say, I don't think we're going to be convincing anybody listening to us to play Magic. It feels like they're already there.
Yeah.
Yeah, to buy into getting to the point where you find, first of all, find this podcast after you're digging past the more popular ones and going through that and then being like, I need more. Like, you're invested. We know.
Yeah, you're playing Magic every day if you can, like me.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite deck of yours? Do you have like a deck that you're like, if I don't get to play this deck this hang, I'm going to have a problem?
So I don't fiend for a specific deck. I have like a handful of decks that I really, really like to play. There are decks that I feel like if I don't play for extended periods of time, I feel a little bit sad. But I don't have to play it every session. I like the variety. Sometimes I don't even bring certain decks with me. Sometimes I'm like, I'm feeling these four decks. I'm going to play these four.
Totally.
A deck that I love, like notoriously love, and this is like proof that I'm not a competitive player, that I think is like so bad. I think it's like genuinely a terrible deck. Not because I didn't build it to the best of my ability. It's just that this deck is just so telegraphed that it's bad. Like you see the threat coming, you know how to disrupt it. It's so obvious, but it's so fun to play, is my Quorum the Undertaker deck. Your graveyard is open knowledge. So whenever you throw something in there to do some damage, people are like, okay, blow up Quorum. Yep. You send Quorum to the graveyard. Okay, I'm going to Bajuka Bog you. Okay, Quorum doesn't have haste. I'm going to blow him up when he goes to combat. There's so many ways to disrupt this deck. But I love going through my graveyard. I love putting stuff in my graveyard and go rummaging around. It's extended hand. I will literally do anything to put something in my graveyard and take it out.
You are speaking to, you are preaching to the choir to a T. I'm the biggest, all my decks, save for like three, have black in them because they need to do graveyard stuff. I have no idea. You know what? I think it might be worth it to pull up my Google Doc here of
all your decks,
my current decks. Because there are some decks that I, oh boy, I for sure have a few non-black decks. I have my Jeskai Legends deck, which is a deck I built to spite a friend. Because I love
spite deck.
You love doing the same thing over and over again, obviously. And I'm like, hey. Fine, fair, good point. But if I'm looking at my decks, oh man, it's very funny because I have them in order and I have them built out in columns where it's like the white column is completely white, blue, black, red, green column, just to illustrate which ones are there, and the black column is just a straight line through all 20 decks that I are pre-builds, and currently I have two non-black decks, and they're both Jeskai. One is the Jeskai Legendary deck, and then my Savine Brash Taunters deck. So, yep. Okay. I guess I have a type. You know what I mean?
I am the same way. If I can put a graveyard theme into... If I can do some sort of magic mechanic that other commanders are doing, but I can do it from the grave, I'm going to do it. Like I have a Legendaries Matters deck. It's my strongest deck, my highest win rate. It's Legendaries Matter, but it's Dahada, and I put stuff in my graveyard so I can reanimate it. So, like, it's like a reanimator. I have a ton of legends that go and get stuff out of the graveyard or care about graveyard movement, and that's my deck. I have Zimone, which is, like Manifest Dread, which is, like, throwing stuff into my graveyard. Or, like, it doesn't have a good reanimator sub-theme, but there are cards in there to get stuff out of my graveyard.
For sure.
Yeah, I love to do a theme, and then like even my Prosper deck, because Prosper is like such an easy target for removal, I run a sub theme of Reanimator in there to just guarantee that the little pieces of my engine for Prosper are recurable. So every time, if you Bajuka Bog me, I'm salty as hell.
I mean, I'm right there with you. If I get bogged, I'm like, look, honestly, I'm going to tell you that's fair because it is. But wow, hurtful. Hurtful is probably the best way to describe that.
I usually tell people, I was like, you have to bog me late, because if you bog me early, I'll just refill my graveyard. I'm not worried about the first bog.
100%. I also had that thought when I built my Prosper deck, but I told myself I need to not do a graveyard theme for at least one of my Rakdos decks. And so instead, I've got a couple of like not dead yet or like Malakir Rebirth effects. And it's pretty well a ritual deck, essentially. Like, it's very mana heavy and you can get them out pretty regularly. So even if he gets removed, I can get him out again.
I once cast Prosper for 12 mana in a game, and that's why mine has a reanimator theme. I cast him for 12 mana and I lost that game.
I have also cast Prosper for 12 mana.
Yeah. People are going to remove your boy.
Yeah. And with good reason.
Good reason. That card's stupid.
Good reason. It really is. I have it in the 99 of a couple of decks. And people forget you can just do that.
Yeah. I think it's. He's stupid. Every turn card advantage when you play from exile, you get to draw a card. And the thing is even if Prosper is removed, that card you flip at end step, you can use later. Like, just crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, you meant make a treasure, not draw a card. But he exiles at the end of turn.
Exiles. It gives you card advantage, but he makes a treasure. Yeah.
Exactly. And there's so many cards that definitely need to be going into my Prosper deck, but I just haven't touched it and it still sings, so I'm not trying to.
Isn't that the meme? Every time there's a new set, there's a good Prosper card every single set.
Absolutely. When we were doing set reviews for EDH Rec and then mostly Commander's Herald when I was writing for Commander's Herald, which I still do from time to time, by the way. I have a recent article on there if you want to check it out. But the it would always be like I'd be assigned red or black. And whenever I got red, it would 100% end up with like a Prosper card. And I'd be like, well, we're finally here. It's the Prosper card. How's this work in my Prosper deck? Will this work in Faldorn? Probably. Who cares? It's Prosper time. Yeah, I don't know if he's the most popular Rakdos commander, but it would not surprise me.
I think he is. Last I checked. Let me crack on EDH Rec.
I'd be surprised if he isn't. Valgavoth, Harrower of Souls.
Valgavoth was also very popular.
By 7,000.
That's
7,000 decks ahead of Prosper. Well, that makes sense. You know,
that's crazy.
More recent and also big scary guy. Also bananas commander.
It's a huge number, though. It's huge. Yeah. I think it's definitely evident of the amount of people who have joined Magic since Bloomborough, though. I think that's what we're seeing here, because Prosper is like an old head kind of commander at this point now.
Like 4 years old, right?
Yeah. He's getting kind of old. So Valgavoth mm-hmm. is the new shiny toy with all these new players.
Especially since I think EDH Rec only keeps the decks that haven't been touched on the online brewing sites for like 2 years are no longer part of this. Like, I know I haven't updated my Prosper deck online in a while. So it's probably not part of this number, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think, Cass, I'd like to ask you, today on Am I the Bullcast, do you have a story for us or do you want to talk about a pet peeve?
I have both, if you would like them. Please. I really like the story that I am going to tell because it presents me as the villain.
Okay, let's do the story first, then.
I wrote an article about a particular card. I wrote a whole article about one card because I had this experience. It's called Exquisite Blood. It's a very, very common combo piece in Life Gain decks. So I sit down at an LGS and this girl sits down and she's like, hey, I'm looking for a game. She's very quiet and a little bit shy. And she sits down and I'm sitting with my partner, who's like a turbo grinder. He's more competitive than me in every way, shape, mm-hmm. or form. And another person, another rando who jumped in our game just to make sure it fired with four people. So we start playing. I don't even remember what commander I was playing. But this girl, the shy girl, says, it's really nice to play with you guys because one of the things that I struggle with is that a lot of times when I play commander, people tend to target me or like bully me. And I get frustrated because I feel like people don't want to play with me. And I was just like, oh, that's so sucks. We're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. She, in a turn cycle, plays Exquisite Blood. I see this card and I'm like, okay, you've just done a crazy psychological warfare on my mind. Because instead of keeping it to myself, I start discussing it. This is something I tell people to do all the time before they do things mm-hmm. in Commander so that people don't get hard feelings is that I say to her, okay, if I attack anyone else in this game from now on, you get the advantage. You will gain an insane amount of life. I have to attack you to mitigate the life gain you'll get in us attacking each other. I'm not targeting you. I'm not trying to be the villain. And so I start to build up this kind of aggro strategy over the course of the game. And I'm attacking. Mm-hmm. Her life total gets really low. She starts to get sad. She starts to look visibly upset. So I think to myself, God damn it. I gotta stop attacking her. I gotta stop. I feel the pressure morally to leave her alone. So I stop attacking her. In a turn cycle, she gains 50 life. And I am like, okay, I'm turning off the nice, and I turbo her, completely annihilate her, completely remove her from the game. And after that, she doesn't want to play with us anymore. Understandable. But in this situation, am I actually the bolus? Am I the bolus? Because you sat down and played an exquisite blood. And she even goes, oh, I don't have the combo in this deck. You have the good half. You don't need the combo if you have exquisite blood. So that's my story.
Okay. I will say this. I run exquisite blood in exactly two decks. One of them is my Rasslin the War President deck, because I copy him so much at my upkeep, I'm often losing 10 life and getting 5 cards sent to exile, and then people can just basically shock me if I don't do something about it.
Yeah.
And instead of running like an Exsanguinate or Gary that I just keep blinking or something, I figured Exquisite Blood would stop some of it, and then I could get something out of it if somebody's just getting dealt damage or something. It does not work in my favor often when I'm playing against players who know what's up.
Yeah.
But sometimes I build up enough of defenses that I can deal with the incoming onslaught, and I can send some pings around the board, and that's fine.
It's a good card. It's not a bad card. It's a great card.
No, but I see exactly where you're coming from. Where I'm like, even when I play it, I'm like, all right, so I'm about to find out if the people I'm playing with have read this card properly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I also running it in my ninth Dr. Claire Oswald upkeeps deck, because that's a deck that needs to survive 11 turns before it can win.
Yeah.
And needs an upkeep to be copied to get upkeep stuff. And really, it's just like, I need something.
Yeah. You need a way to keep your head afloat, especially with damage going around. But how does that actually work for you? Because I feel like if threat assessment is correct, right? You see an exquisite blood come down and you're like, I don't have removal in my hand. Does anyone else have removal for the exquisite blood? No. Mm-hmm. Okay. Player removal is the only next best thing for you, right? Because if you aggro someone else, it pushes them so far ahead. It's double the damage you would have to inflict to win the game. So it's like actually a bad idea to do anything else other than eliminate the exquisite blood player.
So here's what often happens for me, especially in the ninth doctor deck, the upkeeps deck. I will play it among many enchantments, right? The deck is very much an enchantment deck that loves to see an upkeep coming. So it's like the courts. It's got a lot of stuff. Yeah. I put down a lot of things that will be a problem if they're not dealt with.
Got it.
But ultimately, Exquisite Blood is in there in part as a lightning rod. And then also because the deck, because it needs to get into the late game so bad, there is some stacks. There is some like, you know, like Rising Waters is in the deck just to be like, I need to get through. Like,
what does Rising Waters do? What is Rising Waters?
Lands don't untap during the untap phase. At your upkeep, untap a land.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's basically it is a deck that belongs in bracket 4 technically, but is also very much like a, if you come for me at all, I crumble. So it's like yes and no, right? And Exquisite Blood is in there because I need to find a way to pad myself. So what ends up happening when it plays out the way I want it to is other people are bigger threats. They get dealt with. My life skyrockets. I have a bit of a cushion for when I start getting attacked. And then I get to put my enchantments out and have my upkeeps happen. or
yeah, it prolongs your life.
Exactly. Or a generous gift or anguished unmaking gets used on my exquisite blood instead of my court of ire or, you know, court of ambition, which yeah. I really need to win. You know, so that's usually what happens. In wrestling, it's just you get enough tokens in the air that can fly and deal a little bit of damage and mitigate the like loss in that. And people don't tend to swing at me in that deck as much because I have so many little tokens that get in the way.
Yeah, it's like chump anything that comes
exactly.
your way.
Exactly. And it's, again, another one of those things where, like, you deal with it. Now you're not dealing with my other thing that's helping me.
Yeah.
It's a real lightning rod situation. However, I can't play it anywhere else. You played it anywhere else, you're just telling the table, come at me. And I'm already doing too much in the decks that would be able to run it, to the point where, like, if I did this, it would be madness. And frankly, it would kind of be a waste of 5 mana, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's just,
It's like, it draws so much aggro. I wrote this article about Exquisite Blood because it's mm-hmm. kind of, it was an article about the etiquette of removal. How right. much removal can you use on a single player, or how much aggro can you use before it becomes personal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I am doing like a Druid of Purification and everyone picks something on one player's board, do we all feel like bad people, right? Like, do we feel questionable? And when you see something like Exquisite Blood and you don't have removal, is player removal also like faux pas? Right. Is it like bad to want to remove mm-hmm. this player when they have so much advantage, mm-hmm. especially if you're going to remove them early in a game?
Mm-hmm. I would say when it comes to it, is Exquisite Blood can really warp the game in a way that, like, if it continued as normal, they would skyrocket and become unattainable. It then becomes the kind of card that Voltron players can deal with only. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not every deck's going to be led by a commander that can get into the red zone and, you know, slam in the face. It's not going to happen. So yeah. Exquisite Blood does this thing where, like, especially in this story, I think it's hilarious that playing Exquisite Blood is prefaced by, you guys are so sweet. Nobody ever wants to play with me, and you guys have been so welcoming and kind and so cool. I really enjoyed my time with you guys. It feels like we're all playing very equally, and that's great. Anyway, Exquisite Blood. And then you're like, well, I guess the right thing to do here. First of all, thank you so much. I agree. You're lovely to play with. However, the right thing to do here is you play that card, and I can't give you that much advantage, so I'm going to come attack you. And then she's like, what? The f- sorry, Ken. I don't know. I think even in the story, you're very polite about it. Like, to the point where
I'm not a bad person, but I definitely did turbo the hell out of her. Sorry, Ken. I do
I
this
because well,
I just turboed her, and I could have just lost the game. She was totally. It was her first time playing with people. She had bad experiences. I didn't need to win that badly. But I think that part of my logic at the time is that she needs to understand what happens when you play that card, right? Like, there's certain cards right. in the game that you learn not to run because they are lightning rods. They're totally. Basically 5 or 6 mana. They're so oppressive. Nobody wants you to have it. It's like playing mm-hmm. a Ristic. You play a Ristic and everyone's looking for removal or killing you. They're yes. like, you getting so much advantage.
Smothering Tithe.
Smothering Tithe. Oh,
Mind's
my God. Mind's
Dilation for a while was like a big one, that when that hit, everybody was like, oh, this guy. And yeah. it was always like, you know, with Mind's Dilation, it's happened a few times where somebody would be like, okay, removal spell. And then the Mind's Dilation player is like, okay, let's flip the top of your deck and counterspell. Great. Well, I'm going to use that counterspell to counter your removal spell that you played on my Mind's Dilation. And yeah. ha, ha, ha. You know, there's a lot of cards in Magic that are very powerful. And, like, that's part of the point. That's what we want out of this game.
Yeah, we want games of varying power. We want powerful cards. We want to have totally. An advantage. We want that to be fun. The uh-huh. thing is that players also need a threat assess. And sometimes a card is truly so good that I uh-huh. can't let you live. I can't yeah. let you live.
Yeah. Especially if it's like, well, I guess Pillow Fort player over here is playing a ghostly prison and Exquisite Blood, and somehow a propaganda. We got ourselves an Esper Pillow Fort, sure. Yeah. Okay, well, I can't get through over here. I'm not going to attack my other opponents now. Guess what that does for all of us.
Or like, what's that card? Oh my God. It's like a card where you pay X and you deal damage to each player equal to how many lands you control. I love playing that card. I love, it's like 8 mana. It's like gruel. It's not X.
Oh, Treacherous Terrain.
Treacherous Terrain. Yeah, you play this card. Like, a lot of times, like, oh, you pillow fort, we're not doing anything. Everyone's on their 12th land. Life totals are low. I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Treacherous Terrain time. That's the big win con in the Kaneo Sentiro deck in Commander 2016. That came in it. That was made
in
there.
Oh, my God. My favorite little deck is my group hug deck. It's my oldest deck. I had it from when it was first released as a pre-con. I bought it. And it came with Treacherous Terrain, and my current version of the deck has Treacherous Terrain. I still win with that card.
Yeah, it's a great card. Fantastic. It's also, like, imagine you had an Exquisite Blood while you played it. I mean,
obviously, I wouldn't play the Treacherous Terrain unless I could kill the Exquisite Blood player, or they're going to get a lot of life. But, like, still, it's a way to, like, get around, like, Pillow 40 sort of decks, right? Like, they're expecting combat, they're expecting XYZ, and if you could, like, deal damage directly to them, it's a good alternative.
Exquisite Blood's annoying, especially because it also, like, all the drain will feed it. I have this shock land that I've been waiting for turns and turns, and I guess I have to play it tapped so I don't give you too much advantage. Like, you know, two life isn't going to be the end of the world, but if that keeps adding up, you know, one turn cycle and gaining 50 life, I think that I would hope that that would give a player enough of perspective to be like, I understand why you're coming from me.
Yeah,
I get it.
That's sort of the implication of actually, am I actually a bad person here? Because I led up on you, and that was the demise of so much else. Like, you gained so much life, you got exactly what you wanted, and now I'm gonna remove you. You got to play a little magic. Now I get to play a little magic.
Yeah. I don't know. It just feels so funny to me that you were like, okay, I'm not going to focus on you so much. And then she just proves you like, hey, you should have. And you're like, great. Okay, I will. And that's just how it's going to go. And that's,
that card is too crazy.
There's no self-reflection for her in this moment to be like, I guess you were right. I think I should have, maybe considered that you were right. You're correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that somewhere out there she's still playing Magic, and she does play Exquisite Blood and understands, or she doesn't play it anymore, you know.
Sure. I believe Exquisite Blood also came in a pre-con. I want to say it was like the Ixalan Commander pre-con, because there was a vampire deck, wasn't there? There was a there was the Clavileño deck, the Orzhov vampire deck. Definitely came in that.
I think it's older than that, though, originally.
Oh, yeah. It's originally from Avacyn Restored. So it's like...
I just looked that up. I was like, because I know I played it. I know that I wanted to play it in an Alloro deck back when I was just starting. Because there's no good way to, like, to effectively use Exquisite Blood in that Alloro deck. But I certainly tried to make it happen. And Exquisite Blood was a very expensive card. That's why I remembered I couldn't buy the combo. I was literally working like minimum wage, like $8 an hour. I could not afford an Exquisite Blood.
Exquisite Blood out here in Canada, when I started playing Magic, had hit $55, and I had made peace with never playing the card. And then a friend of mine was like, do you want to draft Avacyn Restored? I've got enough boosters for one draft. And we drafted Avacyn Restored alone without the rest of the supporting sets that you need to actually draft Avacyn Restored. It sucked, but I opened an Exquisite Blood, and that's when I had it. And by the time I got one, I was like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to play this. The moment I have a piece of a two card combo, I'm immediately like, you got to pick one. You don't pick both. I'm not playing Kiki Jiki and Pester Mite. It's, anyway, I, That said, I don't think you're the villain here. I know I'm giving it away. Woo. I'm going to give you the verdict right off the bat. You're not the villain. You stated your case, and I think you gave him a turn off, and you gave her a moment of like, hey, you're proving why I was right in the first place. I really gotta. Yeah. I don't think you understand. Like this is no hard feelings, purely. Like there is no. You cannot confound this with anything else. This is truly like.
You might not have known.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might not have known how crazy this card went, but now you know.
Now you're aware. Hey, guess what? You've got a slot in your 99 for a new card, probably. yeah. And isn't that beautiful, considering my sideboards are 30 cards deep, and I never know what to put in. I'm so bad at editing decks. That's why I don't write too many deck techs on EDH Rec, by the way. Anyway, I do love that story, and I also think you're not the villain. You mentioned you had a pet peeve, too. You want to talk about that one?
Yes, my pet peeve really comes down to there's so many new people who play Magic and I don't want them to have bad habits. And one of the things that I see a lot of people do who have played for a very long time is they'll tap mana for a card. They will play it. They won't announce the name of the card. They won't say what the card does. They will try to change phases. They will try to move forward in priority. And I'm like, no, I don't like this because it's tough for other players. One, at least tell me the name of the card so that I can identify what you're doing. If I'm like a new player, please announce what the card does, or at least give me an opportunity to pick it up before you try to move phases.
Yeah.
It's very like scummy to play a card and know that no one knows what it does. Like, please let us have like some interaction. And a lot of people will do this. Obviously, when I play with, you know, like my friends that I play with all the time, mm-hmm. we all know each other's decks, right? Like we don't have to go through that. But if you're playing with a rando, I think it's honestly like such a huge pet peeve for me to watch new players be like, I don't really know what's going on. And they don't know when mm-hmm. to interact. They don't know when to stop people.
Totally.
And a lot of people are like, no takes backsies, no going back. And I'm like, no one here, not to be like egocentrical, I play a lot of Magic. No one here should be saying no take backsies because you do not understand the stack. Like, I know you don't understand priority. Mm-mm. You should not be holding people to this standard that's unrealistic in a game that's extremely complex. So,
and it's only gotten it has exponentially gotten so complicated to the point where like, I completely agree. Anybody who even a little bit says, I don't really play with take backs, I'm just like, wow, that's banana. Like, are you sure we're really playing the same game? Like, I don't think you're...
Sometimes sequencing is hard. There's so many triggers. There's so many things going on that mm-hmm. like, how do you keep any of it straight in your head? And like, I could understand if someone's like, oh, we don't want to roll it back because new information has been assessed,
right.
or like someone drew a card or someone put something in their library. Like, I can understand reasonable stuff like that. But just being like, I tapped a land, played a card. Oh, wait, I want to play my land after I play this card. It doesn't matter, bro. It doesn't matter.
I think what's more important to me is I have a story about this, actually. I think it's also, I take it to the table. You know what I mean? If we're playing a game and somebody's like, I would rather you don't take that back. And I go, hey, how does the table feel? Let's all like talk about it. And then you reach an agreement and that's fine. I also personally, I don't like to do take backs for myself often. Like, I think that what I like to do is I'll notice it and I'll go, I should have done this instead of this. I'll log that away. This is how I learn how to play my deck. That's how I'm evaluating myself. And then if somebody's like, do you want to just take it back? I'll be like, it is the better thing. I'm not. I didn't notice it until now, and I don't think I should take it back. And they'll be like, it would make me feel better if you took it back, because they're like, I would rather, knowing that you had that, and that would have changed your game and your outcome, and I want to play to the best of our abilities. So that's when I'll kind of relent and be like, sure, I'll take it back. But personally, sequencing is difficult, especially when it's new cards. Like, I played in an LGS, this was years ago. This was so long ago. I think it was Shadows over Innistrad pre-release. I played this event and I was up against like this teenager, just really young kid. And we were playing and he regularly would need to take things back. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'd be like, hey, I see how you're getting there. It's like, maybe slow down your pace of play and like read your cards a little bit more. I'll like, I'm showing him my cards and being like, this is my card. This is what it does. I'm playing it now. Do you have any response? No. Really trying to take care and make sure that it's fun for this kid, but also like, I don't want to feel like I'm rolling a kid, and I don't want him to feel like, you know, he can't kind of make mistakes. It's a new set. We're all learning. But one thing he took back cost him a game. And while entirely in my right to call a judge and be like, hey, you know, this is not how it works, and we're playing competitively, because it was back when the store was giving out essentially a booster box to whoever wins, I was like, take it back. Like, we're learning. You can win this round. And so we're 1-1. And then in the final round, I'm attacking for lethal. Like, I have this in the bag, period. Full stop. There's nothing that he can do, tapped out, whatever. And he goes, I attack, and he goes, okay, so I block and block with this and block with this. And I'm like, well, that doesn't win, because like, this guy's only 5 toughness. I trample over for this much. You know, he's like, oh no, that's not like, cause it was like a 3-3 with 2+1+1 counters. And he was like, no, last turn I put like all my counters on him, and I had like +6 on this. And I'm like, you didn't represent that. And also you have those other counters distributed among other permanents. And he's like, yeah, but at the end I said, no, take him off. And I put him on this guy. And I said, nah, I'm not letting that one slide. Like, I don't think that's where we're going to draw the line.
I think, so two things. The first thing is, I think that with any rule or concept, there is a level of vibe checking, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, I've taught a lot of people how to play Magic. And in my experience, there are two things that I've learned. One is that you do need to hold people accountable to their turns. Right. If they say, I want to do X, Y, Z, and they tap their lands a certain way and the turn has ended, we've moved on to another turn, they're locked in. Whatever you did on that turn is over. Right. If we're not in a point where like new information has been assessed, I usually let them resequence, because that's good for brain connection. Right. It's good for you to realize the right way to do it. Because the second thing that I learned is that a lot of Magic players say, if I made a mistake and I don't take it back, I'll learn better. Right. Which is, I think, at least from how I've learned as a teacher and what I've studied in education, that's not true. You actually learn a lot better by making a mistake and correcting that behavior than just being like, I can never correct it because I made a mistake. It's like better for the brain to understand that connection, that you will remember this is the right way to do it. So putting all of that together, I think you were right in that situation. The whole situation had like moved past the point where he had incorrectly created a board state, knowledge was shared, you had taken your whole turn, there was no going back, right? You also had been very generous earlier on with this person learning the game, and you're not rolling a kid, it's a competitive format. Like, I don't take anything back in a competitive format. When I played a pre-release and I mistap, I just lose. But if I'm playing against someone who's new, I'm going to let them take a little thing back. I'm not trying to, it's a pre-release, I don't care, right? Like, But I still feel that like the social etiquette, right, of a person learning to play the game is that we should have some grace in them learning how things work, while at the same time holding them accountable to the decisions that they do make.
Totally. And I think that I think the pet peeve of just like going through it and being like, it's time to move on without really announcing anything. Totally valid. 100% agree. And I will say, I haven't had much experience with play like that, frankly. Whenever, you know, a player, I play Magic, I'm lucky enough to have played with people who will announce what they're playing, describe what it does, even sometimes offer up what it does in the deck. You know what I mean? Sometimes they're so excited to tell you about this card. So I feel like I've been fortunate enough. I think it's definitely happened a handful of times where, like, somebody's tried to move phases when it's like not time, and I have to be like, but also
slow down. I have priority. Yeah.
Not for nothing. This is not how the game works, you know?
Yeah.
And I've actually, this come up a couple times on Am I the Bolus, because, you know, we'll have some submissions where somebody's like gone through combat and like started declaring attackers and drawing off of attack triggers. And he's like, hey, I've been telling you to stop because I have something before you go to combat. I'm destroying the thing. And he's like, well, I already drew a bunch of cards. He's like, no, you, first of all, you f***ed up, dude. Sorry, Ken. You, this is your problem. This is a DQ at this point. You didn't stop. You lose.
Yeah. You know? And so. I stress this heavily, like when people are changing phases, I always like, as like one of my get to know you things is I always tell people, let me know when you're changing phases. Right. And sometimes they'll be like, oh, that means that she has something. No, I just want to know when you're changing phases so I can think. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I want to assess the board state, see if my removal is good right here or not. I want to see kind of like assess the board state. And that's what you're supposed to do in between these sections of think time. Right. And I say this a lot with people. I'm like, before you, when you change phases, I can do something when you declare a change of phase and you can't go back to the original phase. You have to transition. So it becomes sort of like a weird technicality a lot of times when you're trying to assess or remove something, especially in combat, because that's the best time to, if someone says I'm moving to combat, I'm like, hell yeah, my removal is so good right now. So
yeah, because now it's like, guess what? I'm going to remove something for sure.
I'm gonna remove something at the spiciest time.
Yeah. I think both your story and your pet peeve, totally not bolus material. And I got to say, I really appreciate you chatting with me today, Cass. I thank you so much for being on the podcast and being such a wonderful addition to the EDH Rec team. Your articles are fantastic. Make sure to check out Cass's work on EDHREC.com. You got three pages worth of articles in the backlog. How can you not love that? Not to mention, are you on a schedule or do you kind of just write the articles and submit them when you're...
So I'm on schedule. Every day Andy is like, where's my article for Monday? He's not actually that bad. He's super nice. I write, my articles usually go live every Monday. And I have an article that's coming out next Monday, which is why do we hate blue? It's the most hated color, and I don't really understand why. There are other sinful colors, but I kind of get it, if that makes sense. I know what the trigger is.
If you're listening to this the day it comes out, you'll have access to that article because it would have come out either yesterday or last Monday. So make sure to head over to edhrec.com and read that article. And is there anything else you want to plug or leave the audience with today?
Well, yes. So I just recently started doing this deck review stream on Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. People can submit their deck list to me and I will review and assess whether or not their bracket expectations are accurate. It's called deck support. So you submit it. You tell me what the deck's supposed to do. You tell me what its weaknesses are. You tell me what you think the bracket is. I look at your deck list. I go over the cards. We talk about synergy. We talk about effectiveness, how it sort of plays out, and whether or not this is as oppressive or not as oppressive as you think.
And where can we watch deck support?
So deck support is on Twitch at Strixhaven Dropout. It's at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Mondays.
Beautiful. Thanks so much for joining me, Cass. We're going to take this episode down and scoot the day, not the bolus. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening.